All week, we've been talking about women's lives in post-apartheid South Africa. And you can't really talk about race, class, and gender in South Africa without talking about domestic work. That's the South African term for what a housekeeper or a maid does. Under apartheid, black women were not allowed in white neighborhoods unless they were domestic workers. Those restrictions are now gone, but the tradition of hiring housekeepers continues. The World's Jeb Sharp has our story.
In Cape Town, I've been working closely with a South African journalist colleague, Kim Clutie. She's white and lives in a modest bungalow in an integrated middle-class neighborhood not far from the university here. Her house sits behind a high hedge and a security gate, something you see a lot in South Africa. Inside, Kim introduces me to her part-time housekeeper, Nora Suselo, who's black.
Hey, Nora.
Nora's ironing a pile of laundry in the spare, sunlit kitchen. I asked Nora how she likes this work.
Wow, it's nice if the people, they treat you nice. It's very nice. Like here at Kim, I'm very happy. Yes, I'm happy to be working for it because I've been working for, I think, 15 years now. I was still young. I think I was 23 when I started working here.
Nora and Kim are divided by so much: race, class, income, education, privilege. But they seem to have a close and easygoing relationship.
You know what, on Wednesday? What you want to do on Wednesday?
Nora's life has been anything but easy. She was only 8 when her father died. Her mother was pregnant, and there were 4 other small children to feed. They lived in a one-room shack on the grounds of the construction company where her father worked as a watchman. When he died in 1984, the family became homeless.
They say you must move out because they're going to put somebody else who's going to stay there. We didn't have any house. It was very, very hard. We moved from house to the relatives. And my mom told us now, when we're older now, they didn't treat us well there. She said it was very difficult.
It was 2 years before they found another home, a shack in Khayelitsha, the sprawling township outside Cape Town, where they still live today. Nora grew up with her mother leaving the house every day to work in the homes of white people.
My mom told us it was difficult to be a domestic worker. Yes, it was very difficult. It was not the same as now because you have your own things, like your cup, your plates. You have your own toilet outside. Back then, you don't use the same toilets as them. So it was very difficult then, back then, yes.
It's not like that for Nora now, but she has many burdens to bear. She supports her mother, her own daughter, and 2 girl cousins whose own mother died of AIDS. The housework she does for Kim is a crucial source of income for her family. And Nora's situation is common here. According to the International Labour Organization, about 1 million South Africans still do domestic work. The vast majority are black and female. Later in the day, we drive the half hour out to Khayelitsha to meet Nora's family. It feels like a quick trip as we zoom down the highway. But Nora tells me her daily bus route takes at least twice as long because of all the stops and detours. The shack Nora's family found in 1986 has long since been transformed into a little cement house with a front gate and bars over the door. We head inside and meet Nora's mother, Gladys.
Gladys Thandi Wesuselo. I was born in Eastern Cape, 1952.
Gladys tells us about her life under apartheid. Her parents married her off to a much older man when she was only 17. It was 6 years before she had any children, but then she had 5 in quick succession. Then her husband died. She was determined to find a job that could keep her family together.
I'm doing the domestic work, the cleaning, the washing, the everything in the house. Yeah, I'm a housemaid. So it's very difficult to grow my children, but my God kept me.
Gladys mentions God more than once while we talk. She's warm and kind, but her life has clearly been full of hardship and grief, most tragically when her youngest son killed himself 5 years ago. She can't really talk about it, even now.
I'm a woman to pray. I'm a woman to go to church. Always go to church to pray, very hard to pray always every day. And all my children go to church, and all my children go to Sunday school.
I know part of what Nora and Gladys love about church is the music. I ask if they'll sing a favorite hymn for me. Neither hesitates.
It's Mardi Toile is come.
Mardi Toile is come, O Jesu.
The hymn is from John 15 in the Bible, The Vine and the Branch. Abide in me, and I in you. For the world, I'm Jeb Sharp, Khayelitsha, South Africa.
Such fragile voices, and in that hymn, I suspect they find an incredible strength. Jeb Sharp joins me in the studio now. It's striking listening to your stories this week, Jeb, from South Africa, how South Africa is changing, but also how slow change has been. I guess that's what happens when an entire nation has to recalibrate after something like apartheid.
I think that's so true, Marco. I think people like me who go there for the first time think it's going to be the new South Africa. And of course it is. And there's a lot of change and a lot of great, exciting things happening. But I was struck by how much the legacy, the history kind of burn at a slow simmer in people's lives still.
And what about the generation born after apartheid?
Yes, I was really determined to kind of talk to young people, get on a campus, hear about their hopes and dreams and what their lives were like. And we were reporting on women's lives, so I wanted to talk to them about gender in particular. I got this group of students. They were reasonably diverse. We settled down, had a great talk. We started on gender, but quickly moved on to race and class. You can't really untangle all those things. But let's just listen to these students for a little bit here.
White man, black man, yellow man, whatever man does not have to like walk down the street and be whistled at and will never be whistled at. And that's regardless of like race. That has nothing to do with race. That's to do with gender.
Black men are being oppressed by white men. And then at the same time, they come home and then they're oppressing their black wives or whatever.
Culturally, as a black man, it's the feeling is you are much superior to women. And you tend to objectify women because culturally that's the way it is. Women are like your possessions and stuff. So it's kind of a challenge because you try to move out of it, but you have people around you, guys. I have a friend who tells me that a woman is supposed to be just a woman. There's nothing more. She doesn't have to be equal to you. She doesn't have to say anything. You say the final thing. So it's a tricky situation.
It's hard to change thinking, and I think that's the problem. I mean, it's been just over 20 years, and thinking doesn't change that quickly from generation to generation. People, how they were brought up and what they think about that translates into their children, and we are a generation that has like a lot more thinking and open-mindedness, but it still takes time, and I think we're still struggling to break through that.
Jeb, you said it's kind of hard to untangle gender and race and class. And I certainly heard that in those students. They were kind of overlapping each other on some of those topics.
Yeah, and they were really frank in their discussion, which was really appealing. And, you know, these are young people at a really prestigious university with great futures ahead of them, but they're still talking about how slow the change is.
Before you go, Jeb, I mean, you've brought these really evocative profiles from South Africa all week. What strikes you from your reporting on women's lives there?
Well, lots of things, Marco. It was a great trip, but I'll try to throw out a couple. After 25 years in journalism, it was amazing to be told, go report on women's lives. I mean, we just know from the statistics that we cover men more than women, even when we don't mean to. And it was just really great to have a mandate like this. On the other hand, as soon as you get into the stories, you realize you can't cover women without covering men. So you got this kind of catch-22 at the heart of these uncovered stories.
And what about South Africa specifically, reporting there?
It was incredible, and I guess I came away with the overwhelming feeling that we need to do it more. There's so much going on, so much at stake, and there's such resonance with the issues we face here. And we just have a lot to learn, and we need to hear from South Africans more.
The World's Jeb Sharp. I got to say, I learned so much about South Africa this week from these portraits. Thank you.
Thank you, Marco.
Some of the students you just heard are on our Facebook page right now, continuing the discussion on race, gender, and what it's like as a student in Cape Town today. And they're taking your questions at facebook.com/p PRI the World.